today we're gonna talk about how do you do missions local and global without hurting, and just kind of trying to think through how do you do missions well, right? And how do we think about that? How do we think about taking the gospel to the peoples of the world? Let me introduce myself just kind of quickly here. So on the left-hand side is my family. Those are my two boys and my wife there in the middle, and our two daughters-in-law. Obviously, one of our sons is adopted, but actually both of our sons are adopted. So that made for a lot of fun when we were living overseas. We lived in an Islamic context. And interestingly, in Islam, and I don't know how much I should tell you this, but Islam's not permitted. So in Islam, you can't adopt. And the reason for that is actually because Muhammad had an adopted son. And in one of the wars, he took a woman to be the son's wife, but it turned out he liked her. The story is that the son didn't like the wife and they wanted to divorce. And so they divorced, and then Muhammad married his son's wife. But because that caused quite a bit of consternation, since he was adopted, he then in the Quran said that adoption isn't legal. You can't actually adopt anyone. So it annulled adoption so that he could marry this woman. So that's the long story of adoption in the Middle East. So whenever we would go around and I'd introduce my sons, they would look at Seth, who is the older there on your left, who looks a lot more like us. They'd say, "Oh, that's your son, Seth." And then I'd say, "Well, this is my other son, Andre." And they'd say, "How is that possible?" And I'd say, "Well, he's adopted. Actually, both of our boys are adopted." And then I would get to talk about adoption and how we are adopted into the family of God, and we are the children of God. So it created really fun opportunities for us overseas. I'm sure for my youngest, there were times that was fairly difficult, but it would be anywhere. Then this is my wife. This is when we were up in the Sahara. We used to love to go into the Sahara and wander around on the dunes and enjoy the camels. And then this is me in Peru with my buddy the llama. So anyway, we love to travel, we love to have fun, we love to see what God is doing around the world, and be able to be a part of that, right? And that's why you guys are here today, to just talk about, well, what does that mean, and how do we do those things well? How do we think through that? How do we think through that well? So let's start with something that we're all really, really familiar with, and that's just very simply the Great Commission. So in Matthew 28, starting with verse 18, Jesus is speaking to his disciples, and like I want to read it to you from God's word rather than just on my computer, but I love the way Jesus starts, and Jesus says, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me." I was doing a doctoral defense just recently. One of my students, or actually it was somebody else's student, and he was doing a doctoral defense, and he works in the Amazon jungle. Evidently, to get to where he lives in the Amazon, you have to fly to Brazil, and then you take a prop plane to another village, and then out of that village, he comes and picks you up, and you drive for a half hour, and then you get in boats, and you travel for 2 hours, and you end up where he is in the middle of the Amazon. And we're talking about his people that he's ministering to, and these are people who live in just tribal religions. They have a lot of fear. They have their witch doctor. He's working through, you know, what happens when you come to faith and you're a believer now? What do you do with the witch doctor, who's not just the witch doctor, but he's also the medical doctor in essence? And how do you balance these things, and how do you figure out, you know, obviously being a witch doctor, that's not the right thing. And so how do you work through a lot of those things? And one of the things that we talked about is how Jesus says all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. And what that says is all the powers of this world are now submitted to Christ, right? Mm-hmm. So we talked about the fact that what he wants to teach his people is the fact that all authority, God has authority over everything. So the powers of this world are now submitted to Jesus Christ. And where we want to be is submitted to Jesus, right? So helping his people understand what it means to be submitted to Jesus Christ. And that's something for all of us as well. We submit ourselves to Jesus because he has all power. He has all authority in the world. So we go and we make disciples. The command there obviously being the make. And you guys know that we're to make disciples, but we're to make disciples of all nations. And that's a reminder to us that this command wasn't just for the disciples. This was a command given to the church. And as the church, we are to make disciples of all nations. It doesn't matter where we are, doesn't matter what church we're a part of, we are to make disciples of all nations. And as the nations come around us, we think about how we can welcome those nations. So we live in Louisville, Kentucky. In Louisville, Kentucky, there's over 100 languages spoken in the city itself, which is just absolutely crazy when you think about it, because I can like name 10 or 15, maybe I could get to 20 languages, but it's going to be really hard to get to 20 languages. So to think that there are over 100 languages spoken in the city of Louisville is a little mind-blowing, right? And I realize that all of Kentucky isn't that way, but I also know that Louisville is the second leading city in all of the United States in Cubans. So behind Miami, Louisville has the largest Cuban population of anywhere else in the U.S., which is really fascinating when you stop to think about what in the world are these Cubans doing in Louisville, Kentucky. And so we know that God is bringing the nations to Kentucky, to the state of Kentucky. The number of Afghans has gone up in recent years because of what happened in Afghanistan. We see the work of God in bringing refugees. We work with a lot of Iraqis, and we work with a lot of Syrians, and we see God at work amongst the nations there in our city and around us. A friend of mine, he's no longer in the city anymore. He's now in Oklahoma church planting with NAM. He actually crossed the border. We won't talk about how he crossed the border, but he crossed the border from Guatemala and ended up in Louisville, Kentucky. He was a single guy, lost as he could be, met our pastor, one of our pastors who spoke Spanish at Highview, and he shared the gospel with him, and this guy comes to faith. So they start to disciple him, and he starts to grow in his faith. He starts to love Jesus. He ends up marrying a young lady that was a student at Southern Seminary, and they've created a beautiful family. They're living in Oklahoma now. They're church planting with NAM, and God has just done amazing things in their lives because we were willing to open up our hearts to those who have come to us, right? So we think about how we have this responsibility in the Great Commission to go and make disciples, and we are to make disciples, we are to baptize, and then we are to teach, right? So we make disciples, we baptize, and we teach. And all three of these things are vital to what we are to be about. So as we think about missions, the first thing I want to think about is the fact that we have this responsibility to go to the nations and to disciple the nations, right? No matter where the nations are, we have a responsibility to go to them and to disciple them. So as we start, we think about just the first things. And the first thing is that discipleship of the nations is the job of the whole church worldwide, right? So as the church, we are to disciple the nations, and that is to be done worldwide. Now, I want us to think about that for a minute, because Jesus says at the very end of his Great Commission, I'm with you always, even to the ends of the earth. So what are the ends of the earth? Where is that? Where is the ends of the earth? Okay, when we reach the last person, all right, where's the ends of the earth? When I was growing up, it's kind of a little trick question. Y'all are being quiet because of that, I think. But when I was growing up, Timbuktu was the ends of the earth, all right? Does anybody know where Timbuktu is? Y'all heard Timbuktu. We all heard of Timbuktu. Timbuktu is actually in North Africa. It's just on the southern end of Morocco, the northern end of Mauritania. There is a town called Timbuktu. And the reason it was considered the ends of the earth is because when you get there, you're literally, you feel like you're at the ends of the earth. It is all surrounded by desert. There is nothing there. I haven't had the chance to go there yet, but one day I need to get there, get a picture of myself at Timbuktu, right? So the ends of the earth, we think about the ends of the earth, but we typically think of the ends of the earth as being there, right? So we take the gospel to the nations. But what happens then when we see the gospel planted amongst the nations? Where's the ends of the earth now? Well, for that church, it now goes out to the ends of the earth. So maybe For them, Kentucky is the ends of the earth, right? So we see a church planted in Timbuktu. Well, maybe the ends of the earth for them is China. Or maybe the ends of the earth for them is South Africa because they're in North Africa. Or maybe the ends of the earth for them is Ecuador. Or maybe the ends of the earth for them is the United States or Canada. And the point is that the discipleship of the nations is the job of the church, the whole church worldwide. So as we think about doing missions well, I want us to always be thinking about the fact that when we go and we see God work in this place, then in this place we want to see God go and work to the next place, right? And we need to always be thinking in those terms so that we don't just take the gospel to a place. We take the gospel to a place for then to go to another place and to go to another place and to go to another place, right? So the first thing is discipleship of the nations is the job of the whole church. The Pantataethne is all around us. And so we think about how we go. Typically in missions things, we talk about going or we talk about sending. But I also want to think about welcoming. What does it mean to welcome the nations? How do we think about the nations being here in our midst? How do we think about church planting and discipleship and training and teaching here in places like Kentucky, where the nations have come, right? That not only does Louisville have large numbers of immigrants, but Lexington has large number of immigrants. And as those immigrants come and plant themselves in our cities, they then move out to other parts of the state so that they get better jobs and they have more opportunities and it's cheaper to live. And so we have to think about going, we have to think about sending, and we have to think about welcoming as well. And then the fact that we're to go, we're to disciple, we're to baptize, and we're to teach, and understand that it takes people on the ground to do those things well. So all of these things are some of the things that I want us to think about and talk about a little bit this afternoon and the time that that we have. So,
can I ask a quick question?
Yeah, please. Mm-hmm.
Go back to your second point there.
Yes, sir.
I don't understand what that is.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Pantataethne? Okay, so I apologize.
I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Thank you for asking. So the Pantataethne is the Greek for to the nations, right? So in Matthew 28, when Jesus says, all authority in heaven has been given to me, go and make disciples of all nations. The of all nations is the Pantataethne. And the word for nations there is actually the word ethne, which is where we get the word ethnicity. So often when we look at that command, we think about going to the nations. And because you asked that question, I'm gonna pause here for just a minute, okay? Does anybody know where the country of Spain is? Who knows where Spain is? South America?
Europe,
thank you. Okay, it's in Europe. That peninsula just right over the top of North Africa, right? We've got the country of Spain. Off to the side of it, there's this little country called Portugal, but Spain is the majority of what's called the Iberian Peninsula. It's from Spain that we get the language Spanish, right? We get the language Spanish. That's the national language of Spain. Okay, now here's the question. Are there other languages indigenous, that means native to Spain? Spanish is indigenous to Spain. Portuguese is there in Portugal, so we're going to pull it out, all right? Are there any other languages that are indigenous to Spain? Or if we go to the nations, does that mean we only go and speak Spanish in Spain? Does anybody know?
No, there was another language, but I can't remember the name of it.
Okay. So if you go up above Portugal, there's a little piece up there. It's called Galicia, and they speak Gallego. They've spoken Gallego forever. That's their language. It's Gallego. You cross some mountains as you're going across the top of Spain. You come to a region called the Basque region. This is a fascinating region in Spain because they hate Spaniards. I mean, they hate Spanish. They hate Spaniards. Throughout the 90s, they were the terrorists of Spain, okay? They hate it. They speak a language called Basque. It has its own alphabet. It has its own words. It has nothing from Spanish in it. It is a native language. Gallego, at least there's some Spanish and French and Portuguese words in it, but you know, you feel like it's Latino in nature. Basque is nothing like that. It's probably little more German or Russian. I mean, it's that type of language. It's a harder sounding language. You go across the country, you get to the region of Catalonia, which is Barcelona. So you all have heard of Barcelona. They speak Catalan.
That's the one I was thinking.
That's the one most people think about is Catalan. You go south from Barcelona, you get to Valencia, and you speak Valenciano. And then, for the most part, the rest of Spain, you speak Spanish. Well, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 very distinct languages. They're not derivatives of Spanish. They're languages. So when we think about going to the Pantata ethne, we need to think about the language groups that are out there. Who are the peoples, the ethnicities that are around the world? And that's just a simple example from a European country, right? We would think that in this European country called Spain that everybody would speak Spanish, but the Basque would actually spit whenever they spoke Spanish. They hated it so much. Even to this day, there's a little bit of, you know, a little question there as far as, you know, how much they, well, they don't like being Spanish at all. So, so the Pantatai thing, we need to think about the ethnicity. So often we just think in terms of nation, but we need to think of people groups. That's where we get the term people groups from. It's a great question. Thank you for that. So we go to the nations. Now, as we think about going to the nations, I want us to think about three things. We think about a sending church, we think about sending organizations, and we think about the local church. These are called modalities and sodalities. Don't worry about all of that stuff. But we think about, well, what is a sending church? So we start with a sending church, and that's the church that's sending missionaries, right? So a number of your all's churches, they probably send missionaries, right? You have somebody who's going out. Or the beauty of being part of the KBC and the SBC is the fact that even if we don't have a big enough church to send our own missionaries through the cooperative program and through Lottie Moon, we're able to participate in what God is doing literally around the world. So when I was a missionary with the International Mission Board for 23 years, we received support from you guys supporting us so that we could do the work in North Africa. And I was always grateful for the cooperative program because we're all a part of that then, right? So everything that we did in North Africa, Kentucky Baptists were very much a part of that through their giving. So if we're big enough to send on our own or just in participation with what others are doing, we're able to participate in the sending, right? So we go, we send people to be missionaries. Or we think about just as churches, we go, right? We go on short-term missions, which is a little bit about what we're talking about here today. We think about how we can go, how we can participate. So this the end of the month, we're going to Santiago, Chile. We have two guys. He was a former doctoral student of mine. He's teaching at the seminary in Santiago. And he's actually who we're starting a partnership with as Kentucky Baptists. His name is Ben Ward. And so Kentucky Baptists are starting a partnership with the wards there in Santiago, Chile to work in their seminary and to work in that huge mega city where there's just a lack of churches. And so we're going to go spend a week with them, and we're going to go serve them, and we're going to serve in their ministry there. So we go, we send, we pray. Just a few minutes ago, we were listening to the pastor preach about praying and the importance of prayer and the effective vitality of prayer. And he was talking about the I forgot her name. Who used to pray for Billy Graham?
Pearl,
right? Who prayed for Billy Graham to the degree that when she passed away, Billy Graham said, "I felt her loss," right? Because she was such a powerful woman of prayer. Prayer changes things. One time we had a group come in, and I always like to take our teams. I would take them to markets. The way I describe a market in North Africa is Black Friday Walmart. All right, you know what Black Friday Walmart is? Everybody's pushing, everybody's shoving, it's real tight, there's tons of people on top of one another. That was a market in North Africa, all right? So I remember one year we were trying to get into a new work area, and I said, okay, we're gonna go to this market in this new work area, and every time somebody touches you, I want you to pray for them. I knew they were gonna be praying their hearts out that day because I'm telling you, it's like Black Friday at Walmart. And so we went into that market, and These women were a blast. They were some of my favorite teams I had ever had. They were from South Carolina. They were all elementary school teachers. They were just Southern Belles, right? I mean, they were Southern Belles, but boy, they were the toughest Southern Belles I've ever met in my life, right? And so we go down into this market, and they're getting jostled, and they're getting pushed, and nobody's hurting them. It's just, it's so crowded, right? And they're just praying their hearts out, right? And I'll never forget, the next year they come back. They've been praying for that region then for a year. The next year they came back, we went and did a project in that very area that we had been praying about, as God had opened up doors literally miraculously for us to be able to go into that part of North Africa, of Morocco. And it was amazing. I attribute it to their prayers, man, because as they got jostled, they prayed, not just that day, but they took on a heart and a passion for that place as a result of that. And so we think about, how do we pray? How do we pray well? And sometimes as churches, we don't pray well. We don't think about UPGs, unreached people groups, people that don't have enough believers in them to see churches grow and establish and develop. There are places in the world, and I've been, when we were in Morocco, there are places in Morocco that we would go into villages where people had never heard the gospel before. They had only heard of Jesus according to the Quran. And we were able to go into those places and share the gospel. One time we had a group from Lone Oak Baptist Church here in Paducah, Kentucky. A group of men came out. The missions pastor there is a good friend of mine, Jeff Wallace, and he brought this group of guys over, and we built a fence. Literally what we did is we built a fence around a schoolyard to keep the animals out. This is what the community wanted. And so along with the community, we built this fence. And so we spent 4 or 5 days out in this village, staying with the villagers, sharing meals with them, living with them, enjoying their company and sharing the gospel as a result of all of that with them in this remote area, just building a barbed wire fence is basically what we built. Nothing special about it, to keep animals out. But it put us in a place that we could have never been otherwise. And we're able to share the gospel in that place. And so we think about how we pray and how we go and then how we give, right, through the cooperative program and the opportunities that we have to give through Lottie Moon and Annie Armstrong. And then as Sending Church, we need to think about how do we welcome? How do we welcome those who are different from us? How do we welcome those who are unique to us? I go to Central, Highview Central. It's one of our campuses. It's in Louisville. It's down by Churchill Downs. So if you know Churchill Downs and you know that area, you know that that area is full of Latinos, because Churchill Downs has Latinos come to it, and they're the people that walk horses, right? It's really a sad situation. We have some new friends. He's Venezuelan, or she's Venezuelan, he's Cuban, or either way, one way or the other. He's a surgeon, and she's a gynecologist. She's a medical doctor. And they're walking horses on the track as they are applying for visas in order to stay, which they'll get because they're Cuban and Venezuelan. And of course, their medical degrees don't transfer to the United States. And so, you know, it's tough for some folks that are in those places, but we're able to bring them into the church. We're able to love them well. We're able to teach them English. We're able to share the gospel with them. When we were at our other campus off Fagan Bush, prior to COVID, we would have 40 or 50 Muslim women, Iraqi or Syrian women, primarily because their husbands had to get the first jobs they could find, so they typically worked in the evenings. And we'd bring these women from all over the city of Louisville into our church, at the Highview Baptist Church, and we'd teach them English. And sometimes, man, they'd be completely covered. We had a couple of ladies that all you could see were their eyes. And it was amazing how the church just loved on them, right? They recognized the desperate need that these women had, and they knew that we needed to welcome them and love them towards the gospel, right? Help them try and understand the gospel even as they were learning. So as Sending Church, there's so many things we can do, right? We can go, we can pray, we can give, and we can welcome as we are a part of what God is doing in the world. But besides Sending Church, we need to think about sending agencies. What are those organizations that we need to use, like the International Mission Board, right? I worked for the International Mission Board for a long time, and the thing that the IMB did for me is it helped me with logistics, strategy, and accountability. They kept me accountable. They made sure I was doing the things that I was supposed to be doing, that the money that was being spent the right way. We had an earthquake once, and And so we were working with, it wasn't Send Relief at that time, but it's Send Relief today. And so we were going into these villages where there was an earthquake, hundreds of people had died. And I had gotten, at that time it was Baptist Response, a global response, and so I'd gotten these funds from Baptist Global Response. And I could only use those funds for the immediate project, okay? Any money that I spent on gas, any money that I spent on food for myself, any money that I spent on housing for myself, I had to write off to a different budget because all of that money only went to the project and the people who had need. I say that because I want to encourage what we do in organizations like Send Relief. It's amazing what God has given to us because of the cooperative program, because of our sending agencies, the things that we can do that nobody else can do. So if you give to great organizations like Samaritan's Purse or World Vision or Red Cross, a big percentage, depending on which organization we're talking about here, but a big percentage of that goes to administrative costs. When you give to Send Relief, not a penny of that goes to administration. All of that goes immediately to that project. I think that's amazing. But that's because we have these sending agencies. And so it's a good thing. God has given us these sending agencies, given us the opportunity to use these sending agencies, and we're able to put people all over the world. And it's amazing when you stop to think about what we do at the IMB, because with the IMB, we literally have people all over the world. Now, as Americans, we can't be all over the world, right? I mean, there are countries you just don't go to right now. I mean, anybody signing up to go to Russia right now? Only if you want to meet a gulag, right? I mean, as soon as you land, you're going to get arrested for something. We don't know what it's going to be for, but you're going to get arrested for something. But we have people who work with and through the IMB from Latin America or from China or Asia or other parts of the world that we are able to send to places like Russia, right? They're not going under American passports. They're going under their second passports, and they're able to work in those places. We're able to get in and out of places like Iran. We're able to get in and out of places like North Korea. I mean, it's amazing what God has privileged us in what we can do through sending agencies. But then as we think about sending agencies, we've got to think about local church. We think about the fact that God has given us, where we go, churches with whom we can worship, churches with whom we can have accountability, churches with whom we can serve, right? Those churches might just be a couple of believers, or those churches might be larger. It depends on where we're going in the world, right? But we come alongside those churches to partner with those churches when we do missions well, and we ask the question, how can we best serve those churches? So we went to Cuba, and we worked with local churches, and we put on seminary classes, and we taught local believers. I taught a series on world religions there amongst them, and man, it was a fascinating, amazing experience as we worked with the local church, said, hey, what do you guys need? And they said, hey, we want to go deeper in these things. And so we asked the question, how do we do discipleship with them? How do we worship well with them? How do we then do mission with them as well? So we think about, we go, we have to think about our ethnocentric values, right? Especially as we go into a local church. Ethnocentrism, that's a big word. What does it mean? Well, ethno, we talked about the fact that ethno means nation or people, right? So we are all a part of an ethnos. We're kind of a goofy ethnos because we're from America, and so we got a whole bunch of stuff within us. But we are, in essence, an ethnos. We are a people. We are Americans. We are from the U.S., by the way, we're one of the only countries in the world that identifies itself as a continent. You ever thought about that? So you are, well, Australia would, I guess Australians would as well. But when somebody says, who are you or where are you from? You say, you might say United States, but the easier thing to say is, I'm from America, right? Well, so are Canadians and Mexicans and all Latin Americans, right? So it's kind of funny when we think about it, honestly. But we do away with those ethnocentristic, so we are an ethnos, and centristic is we center in on ourselves, okay, which says that my way is the best way of doing things. I've been on mission teams, and I've seen missions done where we go someplace, and we kind of take our own chef, not because there's a need for food, but because we don't want to eat what's local, right? Or we only go and eat at the local restaurants. Whenever anybody travels overseas with me, I tell them before we ever go, get your fill of McDonald's before we go, because you're not going to eat at McDonald's the whole time we're there. I don't care if they're McDonald's there or not. We're not going to eat at them. It was always kind of funny. We had a McDonald's in town where we used to live. And the only place anybody ever got sick when they went to eat with me at different restaurants was at McDonald's. Because they would forget to put the hamburgers away that had mayo on them. And people would order these hamburgers with old mayonnaise on them, and it was pretty bad. So that was the only place anybody would ever get sick was at McDonald's. So we learned to eat like the local people eat, right? There's some amazing food out there in this world. And so going and eating like the locals eat, we go and we live like they eat to the very best that we possibly can. We go and we worship with them the way that they worship, right? Sometimes we want to bring our worship in, right? So we see this worship that we've been doing here the last few hours, and man, it's amazing worship, right? There's some fog going, and there's guitars, and there's drums, and there's, you know, it's beautiful, all these great singers, and man, this is what we need around the world, right? We need some good Chris Tomlin all over the world. And so sometimes we try and export that. When in Morocco, Arab music's a little different from music here, right? And our Berbers, are the indigenous, the Mazichen, the Berbers of North Africa, when they sing, they're about a quarter sharp or a quarter flat. I don't know which it is, but it's just off, right? It's not on my key, right? It's just a little bit off. Well, we're working with them, and one of the guys on our team was just a really good musician. And he said, you know, they need to learn to write their own music. And yeah, that's exactly right. We want them to have their own music. So normally what you do in those situations is you take the Psalms and you help them put the Psalms to music, right? So the Psalms were actually written to be sung. And so you take the Psalms and you put them to music, all right? So that's exactly what he did. Now, I'll never forget, first time I went to worship with these guys, and they had developed this music, and we went into a house. We took pillows and we stuffed them in all the windows and in the doors because Morocco's a closed country. You can't be a missionary there. You can't be a Christian there. And so they shoved all these pillows in, and then they started. Heavy drum beat. They had a guitar with just three strings on it, and they started singing. And I'm going to tell you, it was the most awful thing I've ever heard in my life. I mean, it was awful. Because they sing off key. I mean, like, they were bad off key, right? For my ear. But they loved it. And they were worshiping Jesus with all their hearts. And the music, as much as it wasn't Chris Tomlin-esque for me, it was Chris Tomlin in perfection for them. It was beautiful. It was rich. And it was powerful because it was their music. So often we try and go in and we take our music, right? When actually what we need to do is go in and say, what's your music? Now, how do we help you write it, right? How do we help you think through it? How do we help you develop it? So we think about, you know, as we go in, we think about that ethnocentrism. We think about, you know, the church being the work of God and the people of God who seek to glorify God. So recognizing the local church has a lot of expressions that might not be like ours, right? And sometimes we go into churches and we say, well, they're not perfect like us. And, well, maybe we should go look at our churches. You know what I mean? We're not perfect either, right? So recognizing that as imperfect as they are, we are often just as imperfect. And then, you know, we put that expression as much as possible into that place, into that church. So we think about these things. What it is to be a sending church, what it is to use a sending agency, what it is to be a local church. And, you know, that sending agency for us here in Kentucky is also the KBC. As it develops different partnerships, I was talking to Doug Williams just a little bit ago. We're looking at partnership in Kenya, where we go in and we train local pastors. And the beauty of Kenya is we can go and do all kinds of evangelism in English. I mean, because there's so much English spoken in Kenya. So using the KBC, sometimes if our churches aren't big enough, we can use that in order to get us to different places. So we think about, well, so what are some practical tips then for doing missions well. Okay, so this is what you came for. Practical tips for doing missions well. First thing I want us to think about is when we go overseas, we want to bless our missionaries on the ground. Okay, so there's a couple of things here I want you guys to understand. A lot of times when we go overseas, the way we rate success is how many conversions we had or how many gospel conversations we had. I want us to shift the paradigm. I want our paradigm instead to be, how do we help the person on the field thrive? Not survive. I want missionaries, no matter where they are in the world, to thrive on the field. Okay, what I mean by that is when God takes them from that place, they go kicking and screaming. Almost 15 years ago now, it's been such a long time, God pulled us out of Morocco. There was a number of things going on in our lives. We needed to come back to the United States. We came back, full intention of going back to Morocco. Ultimately, we were blacklisted. I'm not allowed in the country any longer. And God has just kept us from going back overseas because of family, because of needs. We take care of my mother-in-law, just a number of different things. God has kept us here. My heart is to be there. I miss that place. Right? That's thriving on the field, right? Where they miss it. I love to talk to missionaries when they miss that place. It just breaks my heart when they say, man, we just didn't like it there. And then I'm like, well, we need to stay a little longer. So how do we help missionaries thrive? Now, if you guys ever send a missionary from your church, I want you to do something for me. At 10 months, I need somebody to go visit them. The best people to go visit them are an older couple or a couple of older ladies, okay? I know this sounds weird, who will go and take care of their kids so they can go on a date, because they probably haven't been on a date in 10 months, and who also travel around a little bit with them, listen to them speak the local language. At 10 months, most missionaries are so frustrated with local language, they think they're never going to get it. You send a couple of godly, sweet, older ladies, retired ladies, to spend a week with them, they're going to come away saying, man, you are the greatest whatever speaker I have ever heard in my life. You are amazing at how well you do this. Now, they know they're not doing that great, but man, that's all they need to hear. You know, I mean, it's like, I actually am speaking a little bit of this language. I actually am doing something. Hey, I can make it. Sometimes, man, we just let our missionaries flounder for the first few years or for their first term, and we never go visit them because we don't want to be an imposition on them. But what I'm trying to say to us is we're not an imposition. You send a couple of your church members to go love on them and brag on them and hug on them. Just hug on them. That's what my father-in-law, he's from Eastern Kentucky, used to just, you got to hug on them, right? You just got to hug on them. We didn't say that in Kansas City so much, I guess. I don't know, maybe my family. But you just go hug on those missionaries, right? Because I want them to thrive on the field. And sometimes missionaries, they just need a hug. I mean, as weird as that sounds, they just need a hug. We had that group of ladies I was telling you about, they'd come out around Easter time or around Valentine's Day, and they'd put on this big old Valentine's Day party for our kids on our team. And I thought, that's a weird thing to do. But our kids loved it. Man, they looked forward every single year to this group of ladies, so a bunch of school teachers, elementary school teachers. They just loved on those kids, and then they just loved on us. And we anticipated greatly every single year they're coming, and it was amazing. So sometimes we need to measure our success not on conversions, but on keeping our personnel on the ground. Does that make sense to y'all? Because they're the ones who are going to be the best evangelists and the best disciplers. I can go anywhere in the world and I can share the gospel with people, and statistics tell us that out of about every 10 people who come to faith, 7 or 8 of them only prayed that prayer because I was a foreigner. 1 to 3 of them actually did come to faith. We'll talk about that here in just a minute, but it's a small minority. And then I leave. And if there's not somebody there on the ground to disciple them, then what have I done? Does that make sense? So, so I want people to stay on the field. So go and bless your missionaries. Help your church understand, hey, you know what this mission trip is all about? This is about loving on our missionaries so that they stay and they thrive on the field. And that's success. The other thing I really liked is when churches would send a counselor, a pastor out every year, every couple of years, just to sit down with us and talk. Let us kind of pour out our hearts a little bit, because there aren't always a lot of people for us to pour out our hearts to that understand us really well. So bless the missionaries on the ground. The second thing I want to say to us is to rid ourselves of the ethnocentrism, the us, them. Practice I got into a long time ago is whenever I'm talking about others and I use us, them terminology, I stop and I ask myself why. Am I saying them because I'm separating myself from them because I feel like there's something better here than there is here? Or is it just a simple designation? Sometimes you can't help using us, them terminology, right? You can't help that. But most of the time, what we'll find when we do that is we're actually creating distance. And we don't want it to be us, them. We want it to just be us. Right? I'm going and I'm working in this local expression of church, which I'm learning to love because it doesn't sound like my church, but I'm learning to love it because it's God's church. And it's the expression of the Father in this place. It might not look like what I'm used to. It might not act like what I'm used to. It might not sound like what I'm used to. But it's the expression of God in that place. How can I not love that place? How can I not want to serve my brothers and sisters in that place? So get rid of our ethnocentrism. Learn to eat the food that's local. And sometimes, you know, it's hard to eat. So just one little tip. When I was younger, this worked really, really well. So Stephen, this will still work for you. But always take someone older than you on a mission trip. Okay, do you know why? Because when they serve the delicacies, they give it to the oldest member on the trip, right? So you're saying, hey, this is the honored guest. Somebody has to eat pig eye, it's them, right? Or they have to eat lamb brain, you know, he's the honored guest. Just pass it on over to them. Yeah, I kind of help lead the team, but they're the honored guest. So just always remember, take somebody older. As I'm getting older, it's getting harder and harder to do that, right? I got to find people a lot older than me. So anyway, learn to eat the food, right? I mean, it's sometimes it's a little bit weird, but we can do it, right? We can do it, and we learn to love the people that we're with. The third thing is we need to go and we need to serve, right? What do people need on the ground? How do I serve them best? Not how do I take jobs away from others. Too often when we do different types of projects, we take away jobs. So I told you we built a fence. Well, we didn't build a fence. We built a fence. We would not step foot on the grounds of that school to build a fence unless the community came out and built the fence with us. Does that make sense? So we wouldn't do it unless they came out to help build the fence, and then they had to feed us every day as well. So you're feeding this whole group of Kentuckians, right? Which cost them probably more than the fence did, ultimately, to be honest. But they worked alongside of us, and that's how we best serve, right? We serve alongside. So, you know, you read books like When Helping Hurts to help us understand how do we go into places and help without hurting. But we go in and we serve. We go in and we serve our missionaries. We go in and we serve the church, right? What does the church need? How can we bless the church? How can we show honor to the church? How can we serve well? I could always tell, you know, when we had servants come in, because if they came over to the house for dinner, we wouldn't have to do dishes afterwards, right? They did all the dishes for us after we'd gotten done eating. They would help clean up. Just simple things like that, which seem so simplistic, yet they're so important to the families that we're going to work with. Typically, after hosting a team from anywhere in the United States, we would be exhausted at the end of the week because we were just, you know, it's just go, go, go. You could then go home and you return to kind of some normalcy. And, you know, we've been worried about you. We've been doing language. You know, we've been doing all of this stuff to take care of you. And we're exhausted, right? So how do you best serve those missionaries on the ground? How do you love them well and serve them well? So we want to serve, serve, serve. And then we want to share, share, share. So whenever we have the opportunity to share the gospel, we share the gospel. So couple of illustrations. We had a group come in from Venezuela one time. This was prior to Venezuela as we know it. We had a group of Spanish speakers from Venezuela. I speak Spanish, and so they came to work with us. And one of the Venezuelan people that came in was an English teacher, right? So he's a Venezuelan Spanish English teacher. We're wandering around, and we're in this village, and he runs into the English teacher in Morocco, right? And so he says, "Hey, we got English as a common language." So he shares the gospel with them. And the guy comes to faith. Now, normally in an Islamic context, you're talking about 100 shares, right? You have to share with people. And he gets to do it on his first visit. And he's thinking, yeah, this evangelism of Muslims is easy, right? And he shares the gospel with the guy. The guy comes to faith. Well, being the paranoid Westerner, we think, oh, this guy's a cop, right? So obviously he's a cop and he's trying to trap us and whatnot and so forth. And so that's what I'm thinking. Well, we start to work with them, we start to disciple him, and we start to hear his story. And actually his story was fascinating because 10 years earlier, he had seen a group of Americans, Westerners, they were Westerners, not just Americans, they were Westerners, and they were singing Kumbaya in a park. And he thought, well, that's a weird song. What song is that, right? So he investigates Kumbaya. And I don't actually even know what Kumbaya means, but as he investigates it,
Come by here,
right? It's a God, but it's a Christian song, right? So Kumbaya, my Lord, Kumbaya, come by here, my Lord, come by here. And he starts to investigate, and over the next 10 years, he starts to investigate Christianity. And at the end of that 10 years, he meets this Venezuelan English teacher who shares the gospel with him and brings it all the way around. So share. Sometimes you're on the Kumbaya end, and sometimes you're on the receiving end, right? Another friend of mine, he was on a train in North Africa as well, and same thing happened. Man shared the gospel with this guy. Daggone, the guy comes to faith. You know, it's a killer when volunteers share the gospel with people and they come to faith like that, because we're busy telling them, yeah, it takes 10, 15 years to see anybody come to faith, and they're like, that day they're seeing somebody come to faith. Saw somebody come to faith, but it was the same story. For 10 years, the guy had been hearing the gospel. And this guy just happened in that moment to be at the right place at the right time. Or maybe it was a God-appointed encounter that God had placed for him to share the gospel. I don't ever want us to forget that. When you run into somebody that speaks English, share the gospel with them. All right? Just share the gospel with them, and especially when you're in closed countries. Because the worst thing that will ever happen to you in a closed country, other than North Korea, don't be careful there. But the worst thing that's going to happen to you in majority of other parts of the world is you might get taken down to the jail and then put on the next plane out, right? I mean, that's pretty much the worst thing that happens to us. But again, that keeps our missionaries on the ground, and you never know who God's going to put in your path. Don't hesitate to share the gospel with people that you meet, especially when you're doing it in English. And like, seriously, in restricted access nations, share the gospel with people who speak English. They might be a police officer. You don't know if God's working on that police officer's heart. Mm-hmm. They might just be that person that listened to Kumbaya 10 years ago and has been waiting for somebody to tell him about Jesus. So we share. And then we tell our stories when we go home, right? We tell our stories when we go home. Now, I always tell people when they go home, make sure you have a 30-second story, because people don't always sit around to listen to a 2-minute story. But have those 30-second stories. Have those stories about what God has been doing in that part of the world, and share those stories. People need to hear. They need to get excited about what God is doing around the world. They need to know that they have brothers and sisters all over the world. Remember that we're not just part of our local church, but we're part of the universal church. And as part of the universal church, man, we have brothers and sisters all over the world, from places like Yemen and Russia and China and Afghanistan and Somalia and Uganda and Peru and the United States. Okay? So, thank you, guys. I don't know if you all have questions. Do anybody have questions? What time do we have? We have about six more minutes. I can share a couple more things about how it's been done well. But do you have any questions before I do that? If anybody have any questions?
John, is there, if there's an ethnos in your current context, is it a good idea to maybe try and go, like if you have a lot of Hispanics, to go to a Hispanic country? Because sometimes we get blind, these folks that are all around us. Is that a helpful thing to do? Or?
Yeah, that can be super helpful. Yeah. Like there's a ton of Guatemalans as well here, so getting out to Guatemala. Because what happens is then you're able to talk to the Guatemalan. Yeah, I was in Guatemala.
Yeah.
I got to meet these people. I got to see this church and things like that, so sure. But more than anything, we just need to engage. So we say, well, they don't speak English. Well, then start an English program in your church. Amen. If you contact me, I can help you do that. There are a lot of other resources that are out there to help you start English programs in your church. People need to learn to speak English. And I don't say that as an ethnocentric value. It's because if they want to work, they've got to speak English.
Yeah.
And so I want to help them work. I want to help them succeed. I want to help them see their kids do well in school. That's another huge ministry that you can get involved in, is just helping their kids learn to read. I don't know if you know this or not, but we quit learning to read in the third grade. In the fourth grade, you read to learn. Okay, so up through third grade, you learn to read. Fourth grade, you read to learn. It's a huge cutoff. Statistics tell us that if a kid can't read by the fourth grade, the majority of those children don't graduate from high school, and a huge majority of those end up in prison. All right, so thinking about that, how do we help those kids learn to read so that they don't become a statistic? Does that make sense to you guys? I think the ministry that we can do in public schools as churches is forgotten, how important it is for us to be in the public school and teach, help kids learning to read. I mean, man, can you imagine parents, how thrilled they are when their kids are getting attention like that? Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah. Anybody else, any other questions?
As a missionary on the field, do you believe my five short-term members or less on mission trips?
Oh.
What was hard for you? Or
In Morocco, we liked it in that 5 to 7 range. Because I could put them in a car with me, typically, or a van, and I didn't have to worry about losing them. If it got much bigger, one time we had a huge group. We had actually two groups that met together. One, I had a student group, a high school student group, and then I had another group, and both of those groups were 10 plus. And I took them all. We went to this village or this city. It wasn't a village, it was the city. And I couldn't keep track of everybody, right? And turns out I left a group of them at the hotel. And we all went out to eat. We had a great time. I didn't miss them. And we got back, and I had some irate volunteers waiting for me, man. And they were like, "You left us. How could you leave us here all by ourselves?" So I like smaller groups that I can keep up with. Yeah, big groups can be really, really hard, unless you have a big team that's helping you with that. Anybody else? Any other questions?
Yeah. How do you get a church in a rural area interested in global missions?
Well, I think we can do it a lot of different ways. We can start easy and cheap. So, for an example, you can get to Clarkston, Georgia, just outside of Atlanta. Send Relief is there. They're doing some amazing work with internationals. It is, per capita and mileage, the greatest concentration of internationals in the U.S., according to them. I know the guys that work there, so it's probably an accurate statement. So you can do things like get them there to see the nations. You can get them to Louisville to see the nations. We go up to Dearborn. Dearborn actually is an amazing trip. If you all ever get to Dearborn, it's an amazing experience to go and see Islam in North America. So you can start doing simple trips like that. I've got a buddy in Toronto. Toronto is just, man, he was sharing the stats. I don't have them here with me, but they were overwhelming how in Toronto, within just a couple of years, the majority of all people in Toronto will be foreign born. So well over 50% of all people in Toronto will be born foreign and then come to Canada. So we can start with stuff like that, which are easy trips.
Partner with your association too.
Yeah, you partner with your association, partner with the KBC to get overseas as well. And then even with the IMB, there are trips that you can do with the IMB. But like you're leading students, so I would take students just to the States to begin with. Parents do better with that, and it's easier for you. I didn't, so this is just a bias for John. I didn't like to bring students under the age of 18 because the responsibility was just so high for me, right? I mean, I couldn't leave them. Fortunately, the people I left at the hotel were part of the older group, so they were all older adults, so I didn't feel as bad about that, but you have to be a little bit careful. So, you know, in your case, you can go to Dearborn, you can go to Toronto, it's just across the border, you can go to Atlanta, things like that, and start introducing them to international students or international groups. Does that help? I mean,
we have Cincinnati too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know Cincinnati as well. I have a funny story about Cincinnati, but I don't know Cincinnati as well. At Columbus, I know has a ton of Somalis. I just don't know. I don't know Cincinnati as well. So you can investigate Cincinnati. Some great church planters in Cincinnati. Yeah.
John, this is a recent thing, but the IMB has connected every international missionary with a local church in the United States. So if you don't know who that is, you can call the IMB, and they'll tell you who that is. They've been trying to reach you.
Find out who your missionary is. And then through NAM and the IMB, there's just lots of opportunities. So I would just start looking for those things.
Yeah, my wife was looking at Impact.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an IMB.
In the U.S. though, or is it overseas? Mexico, maybe?
I don't remember. All the trips are like full for this year, but she was looking at that for possibly next year.
Yeah, there are great opportunities out there. I'll just say this to y'all though. Okay, so this isn't going to go well with your parents. It's safer in Morocco than it is in Guatemala. I don't know if y'all know that or not. We like to do these Central American trips. Central America is like super dangerous. I could take you to Morocco. I could leave you alone in Morocco, man. You're going to be well cared for, which is a restricted Muslim nation, right? Anyway, I don't know why I just shared that, but it's always funny to me because, you know, sometimes churches want to go to Central America, and I'm thinking, man, you get shot. It's really dangerous there. Nobody has a gun in Morocco. They don't let them have guns, you know, and you're going to be well cared for. Police are literally watching you the whole time you're there, you know. So anyway, sorry. Other questions? That's not going to go over well with your parents, by the way. If you say, hey, we're going to Morocco. They're going to say, Monaco? You say, yeah, Monaco. That's the place.
My in-laws weren't thrilled about when we went to Cuba, and I'm like, Cuba's not dangerous.
Yeah, Cuba's definitely not dangerous. Yes, sir.
So just brainstorm a couple more ideas with regard to you had pray, send.
Yeah.
Welcome was kind of a new concept for me, and ESL being a part of that. What are some other really good ways that we can welcome the nations in?
Yeah, I do a ton with elementary school students.
Okay.
Imagine, because I saw this in my kids, right? So we sent them to public school. Wherever we lived, to a certain age. And that's hard. They're learning a whole new language. So how do you help them with that? Mm. How do you help them get in the right schools? Now, there's only one Jefferson County Public Schools in the world, which is a good thing. So we're always helping people figure out what's the right schools to get into in JCPS. But how do you get them into the right schools? How do you help them learn to talk to their teachers? So things like that. We would help people learn to drive. That's super big. Teach them not to pay tips to the police officers, if you know what I mean. Whatever you do, don't tip the police officer like you do back home. Stop at stop signs, you know, things like that. It's a different world, right, when it comes to driving. If they're really, really new, you gotta teach them how to use the heat in their house without getting a huge bill, because they might think, oh, I can set this at 80 and, then all of a sudden they get these humongous bills and don't know how to pay them. And then helping them find jobs. Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely. There's tons of other stuff you can do as well, but those are the big ones. Taking them to a grocery store. In most parts of the world, when you go to a grocery store, you go to someone and you say, I want this, this, and this. it's not always that you go and you pick out what you want. Mm. And in most places of the world, literally most places of the world, you don't have 100 cereals, mm-hmm. right? So just helping them think through what's the best thing. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We would teach them it's okay to drink from the faucet. In most parts of the world, you don't drink from the faucet. So, man, now some of you might not drink from your faucets. I don't know. I have friends that just won't drink from the faucet either. We drink from the faucet all the time, but yeah. It's just kind of funny that, you know, because they're not accustomed to that kind of water, and we have good water. Yeah. Anybody else? Any other questions?
So you said something about ESL resources. What do you like to use to do ESL?
Well, I mean, honestly, you can just jump online, and depending on the level of your people, right? If they have no English, you can jump online. You get worksheets that are My Name Is, and you can go through that, going through the alphabet and stuff like that. So there's a ton of resources online. I know at Boyce College, through Refuge Ministry, one of our professors, she's a linguistics professor, she works with churches that want to do ESL, and she'd be willing to talk. You can write me at jsclausen at sbts.edu. So you can write me, I can connect you with other resources. I know John Barnett is doing a lot of stuff as far as just different ministries to refugees as well, so I'm sure he has ESL ministry resources. If I like to do it in church, no matter what their religious background is, Muslims will come in a church, and it's a really good habit. I want them to know that they're safe, and that they're loved, and that they're prayed for. And honestly, I was pleasantly surprised at how well Hy-Vee did with those women. And they did. They just loved on those ladies. It was amazing. It was absolutely beautiful. So you might have to help your church figure out what that looks like, but you can do it. You can do it. Any other questions?
I have one more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How can we, do missionary care for missionaries that are called back to America?
Yeah, that's a great question.
So I feel like we just kind of, I feel like churches can be really good at missionary care if they are good when you guys are overseas. But when they come back, I feel like we just end that partnership with them.
We're still not comfortable 15 years later being in the U.S., we are very much third culture people. We like to be in environments where multiple languages are being spoken. So helping them find ways to do ministry amongst refugees and things like that, listening to their stories, understanding that their idiosyncrasies are distinct and weird. We're all weird, right? I mean, to some level, we're all weird. So, but theirs are weirder, right? They're just different. Helping them with their kids and adjustment coming back because their kids are struggling. I had to take my boys, so I have two boys, I'd have to take my boys and I'd have to say to them, listen, when you're with an American boy, you can't stand right next to him, you have to create space, you can't hold his hand, you can't have your arms over them all the time. That's just not the way we do it in America. And so helping your church kids understand these TCKs that are coming in, and helping those TCKs as they work through the adjustment is huge for parents as well. Just seeing you love on their kids is a big deal, as it is for anybody, right? But for missionaries especially. Yeah. Does that help? Helping them navigate what's the work world now. If you remember a few years ago, David Platt offered a buyout for a lot of missionaries that came back to the States. And a lot of missionaries took that buyout not realizing what it would mean to come back to the U.S., and they really struggled when they came back. So this is a huge benefit. Yeah. Thank you for that question. Anybody else? All right, well, listen, let me close this in prayer because we've already gone a little bit over time. Thank you guys for your attention. Thanks for being here. Let me pray for us. Father, we're so grateful for this privilege that we have to serve and to do ministry. And pray that we would genuinely do it well. We would love you and that we would love the nations, the ethnos, the people that you've put us with. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.